It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. PBS Wisconsin launches its two-hour documentary that is a detailed look at diverse stories and brings awareness to the rich history of LGBTQ plus people in our state. It's called Wisconsin Pride. We explore the themes of the film and what they reveal about our state's history through a more inclusive lens. And you can join in at any point. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bryce Smith is a public historian and activist, executive director of LGBTQ Milwaukee. That's a historic walking tour app. Bryce, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Good morning. And Andy Soth is here as well, senior producer for PBS Wisconsin and produced Wisconsin Pride. Andy, welcome back.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Andy, let's start with you. Wisconsin Pride documenting what you've called the often overlooked stories of LGBTQ plus people in our state's history. What did you learn from creating this documentary?
Oh, my God. Well, I could fill the hour with that, but I'm not even sure where to start. But, well, I just learned this, they're just really fascinating stories and fascinating individuals, and who I would not meet or know under any other circumstances, really. Mm. And I think one thing that's really important to know is that Wisconsin was really a leader in many ways. We have a lot of firsts, and I think particularly politically, Wisconsin has been a leader in terms of gay rights and electing LGBTQ representatives.
You know, you talk about the first part of the documentary being these hidden stories. What is the challenge around bringing these stories to life accurately when you don't maybe have the first person accounts?
Sure. Well, of course, you know, we call the first chapter Hidden Histories.
Or Hidden Histories, and, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, because being homosexual was against the law, it was not something that could be done out in the open, nor did you necessarily want a record of it. So, you know, you wouldn't even necessarily be, completely honest in letters. And so that means there's very little a historical record. And the record that is there is often, because of its criminalization, is through jaundiced newspaper accounts and court records. So we obviously have that evidence that there were LGBT people, but we don't have a lot of their, say, personal effects, and we don't have a lot of public record of their activities, a part of when they were being persecuted. Mm-hmm. So that, excuse me, that makes it very difficult. And I think, LGBTQ plus historians have become very, you know, sophisticated at reading between the lines and seeing sort of, you know, the codes that were used and things like that. But then I think particularly sort of a visual record, which of course is what we need, was really, really challenging. We come up with some really good solutions, I think, in the program with some art design, and we really make the great use of the archival resources that we do have.
Yes.
But
Bryce, I wonder, as a historian, when you have a complex history and you have all of these primary documents and pieces and parts, how do you navigate that when you're trying to be accurate and bring this documentary to life?
Sure. And I think it depends on the subject matter. I was lucky enough to be invited to be a part of this project because I am the biographer of Lou Sullivan, who is actually a well-known trans man originally from here in Wisconsin, who went on to become world renowned for the work that he did in trying to help educate others about trans people and about the existence of trans people who are also gay. And in my case, actually, I was lucky in that I had an embarrassment of riches from which to work, because Lou just documented so much of his life because he was so afraid that he was going to die one day and that people would think that or would say again that there could be no such thing as a trans person who is also gay. So he kept diaries for decades. He also
Starting at
kept
age
copies.
10, which is really remarkable.
Right. Yes. And he kept, copies of his correspondence to others, not only the letters that he got from people, but also how he responded. He was a self-trained historian himself. And, like Lou, I found that, there's something so empowering about being able to see yourself in those who came before us, and being able to find others in the historical record, with whom you could identify and to be inspired by the ways in which they have overcome the challenges that they faced.
Bryce Smith, there, public historian in the Milwaukee area. Andy Soth with us, senior producer for PBS Wisconsin, as we talk about Wisconsin's LGBTQ plus history and this new documentary, Wisconsin Pride, from PBS Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234. Bryce, continuing on about Lou Sullivan, who died in 1991 at age 39. Lou wrote newsletters to the trans community.
As long as no one else is talking about it's going to be forever silent. No one's ever going to hear about it. I wanted to connect with people and feeling like an honest person with people. I just don't see any reason to hide it.
How influential were these newsletters in telling this story?
Oh, immensely. And, we have to remember that, 1991, that was before the explosion of the internet, right? Which has drastically changed the ways in which we connect with one another, especially trans people such as myself. His newsletters were just vital to connecting trans people all around the world. Again, there were people who subscribed to this. South America, Europe, and all across the United States as well. And it was amazing as I was working on Lou's biography, connecting with some of the older trans men in the community and hearing from them just what these newsletters meant to them, being able to have some sort of contact with someone else with whom they could identify. There was no public representation of trans people at the time. If anything, maybe a couple of talk show spots, where they were basically treated like tabloid fodder. So that, yeah, just I can't say enough how important these were in helping to connect men and to foster a sense of community too, which was so important.
Listening to you, Bryce, makes me think, Andy, just how important it was to have specific experts for this. I mean, you had this advisory board, historians, filmmakers, academics involved with this project. How did they inform the approach and the content of the film?
Oh, well, they're just key and crucial. And what's great, and Bryce really exemplifies this, is these are people who have both professional and personal passion for their topic. And we had a we'll probably talk about Dick Wagoner. So
Yes.
obviously he was key, but then we really branched out and found sort of great experts who brought both, their own sort of rigorous academic approach, but also their passion for their topic. I'd mention another example would be Josie Osborne, who was talks to us about the founders of the Layton School, Charlotte Partridge and Miriam Frink, who she academically is an art professor, but she actually grew up in the same neighborhood as Charlotte and Miriam, and knew them as a child. Did not know that they were this kind of amazing Milwaukee power couple in the arts community, but that as she went on in her own career, she learned that and really inspired her, and she really brought that passion to our interview.
PBS Wisconsin's Andy Soth produced this new documentary, Wisconsin Pride. We have historian Bryce Smith, the founder and executive director of LGBTQ Milwaukee. That's a historic walking tour app. You can be part of the discussion, share insights at any point, call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. PBS Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Historical Society, they team up on this new two-hour documentary called Wisconsin Pride, digging into the perspectives and stories of LGBTQ plus people in Wisconsin through the decades. You can join the conversation along the way. Call in with a question, share thoughts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Bryce Smith is here, contributed to the documentary, is a public historian and leads LGBTQ Milwaukee app. And PBS Wisconsin's Andy Soth is producer of Wisconsin Pride. Andy, let's talk about Dick Wagner, the activist, the historian, the gay rights leader, the public servant. You very much part of this documentary process, I understand. And back in 2019, we had Dick Wagner on our show talking about the first volume. You know, we've been here all along, Wisconsin's early gay history. And I just want to take a listen for a moment.
There is a long gay and lesbian history on trans people in the state, well before Stonewall, and I'm covering those stories. The other is the emphasis that it didn't all happen on the coast, and that, you know, if you're thinking flyover country doesn't have a gay history, you're totally mistaken.
Mm. What role did Dick Wagner have in informing this documentary?
Oh, everything. I mean, his work is seminal. And he was our ongoing voice. We returned to him again and again. We wouldn't be doing this project, of course, without his doing the books. And the books are a reflection, you know, first of being an activist, and then being a collector and amateur archivist, and then writer of columns for Our Lives magazine, and then finally his books. So yeah, we're entirely indebted to Dick for his great work.
I like how you said amateur archivist. He had so many documents, so many pictures, so many sourcing documents. How did that help you in this process?
Oh my God, incredibly so. And not only that, but you know, as he did not become a professor, even though he had a PhD in history, but he had that training, and he just left the breadcrumbs in terms of footprints. So, I mean, sorry, footnotes, also big footprints to fill. But his work is engaging and fascinating, but also extremely well documented. So it was a very easy, you know, the path was really laid for us to, you know, go back to those original sources, those original source material. A lot of what we have are newspaper headlines, and they were highlighted and footnoted by Dick. So they're, you know, easy to find. And there's just so much material that he collected. I think it was 40 boxes that he donated to the Madison LGBTQ archive.
Bryce, what do you want to share about Dick Wagner, who died in 2021?
Well, I feel like everyone has a Dick Wagner story, and they always want to share it whenever he comes up. Mm-hmm. I actually credit Dick with being the reason why I was invited to participate in this incredible film, because I was actually doing a book reading in Madison at a Room of One's Own, and Dick came to the reading, and he was just standing in line like everybody else to get a copy of the book signed. I signed it for him, you know, just not really paying attention. Then someone nudges me and says, "Oh my gosh, that was Dick Wagner." Said, "Oh my gosh, they're kidding me, really?" Because, you know, Dick being Dick, he's just standing in line like everybody else, you know, just always so kind and humble. And he said, you know, he was just so excited to learn about Lou Sullivan that he didn't know anything about him. And he found his story so compelling. So we connected. I was able to share some pictures with him, and thankfully, he included Lou in the second volume of his work.
Coming out, moving forward, the book in 2021.
Yes.
How has Dick Wagner influenced you, Bryce, as a historian, as a public historian?
Well, just being able to see someone, you know, doing the same thing that I love to do as well, right? Trying to find ways in which to tell our stories. And to do so with grace and kindness, and to use history as a way to excite people about the community that we belong to, as a way to bring people together, and as a way to help break down barriers of homophobia and transphobia. You know, there's just, and I'm so grateful that Andy and company took the approach with this film of really focusing on individuals, because I feel like in doing so, and even as we find in our personal lives, you know, that you're able to connect with individuals in a really personal way. And I feel like it's those types of connections that help to break down barriers. So it's also, you know, telling the stories of the people who came before us and allowing, you know, not only members of the community, but allies and would-be allies beyond too, to also really get to know these remarkable people and find ways in which to connect with them on a very human level.
Bryce Smith is a historian and activist in the Milwaukee area. We have Andy Soth with us, a producer of the Wisconsin Pride documentary. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Andy, turning to the LGBTQ archives, the UW-Madison LGBTQ archives, significant source of material for this work, this documentary. What role have these archives had in your ability to showcase this film?
We obviously owe enormous debt to Dick for his, you know, his research and intellect, but because we're a visual medium, we could not have done it without the archives. And it's really, you know, Bryce mentioned the work of individuals. It's really individuals who have done that. I mean, people who have kind of seen the need. The Madison LGBTQ archive, which is housed at UW-Madison, really started from oral history project. And Scott Seiforth, co-founder of the archive, would do oral histories, and then people would say, hey, I got all this stuff. And so he, you know, set out to find a home for that stuff. And he has done some of his own history, but he's really kind of creating this resource for future historians. And that's, you know, so that has just been an amazing resource. Another great resource is the Wisconsin LGBTQ History Project, which is actually exclusively an online archive, but it's sort of become the Wikipedia for Wisconsin LGBTQ history.
I would imagine too, some of these, some of the films that are still in existence, the old tapes, they can be fragile, they can decay. How have you been handling those types of sources?
Yeah, well, we're lucky that, we're a broadcast entity, and just about any kind of tape format.
You can take it.
We can take it. Yes. And so, there were the dusty boxes of VHS tapes we picked up from the archive. And that was just just an incredible sense of discovery, because you felt like, oh, gosh, no one has a VHS player anymore. And these have been sitting around, maybe a sight unseen for years. And so that's great. And finding kind of great discoveries and surprises, like a video of a ACT UP protest in Madison led by Dan Savage.
ACT UP protest. Bryce, I wonder, you've said there's something unique about how Wisconsin and Midwesterners approach activism. What makes Wisconsin special?
Well, I like to joke that here, you know, we don't demand our rights. You know, we're good Midwesterners. We believe in working hard for them. And I also feel like, we've been able to make the progress we have largely through relationships, you know, just by being good neighbors, by connecting with people and helping them to get to know us. And something that I loved getting to watch the premiere in person at the Oriental Theater here in Milwaukee on June 9th. And actually a friend of ours, an ally to the community, came to the film. And it was so cool that afterwards, you know, she said, I am so proud to be from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, that's hopefully the big takeaway from this film, is that everyone who watches it just feels this sense of pride of this amazing state that we live in, and what we've been able to do over the years.
Bryce, thank you for your work and thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thrilled to be here.
Bryce Smith is an author, activist, and historian, part of the Milwaukee Transgender Oral History Project, executive director of LGBTQ Milwaukee app. Andy Soth stays with us, producer of Wisconsin Pride. You can join in the conversation about the LGBTQ plus community through the decades. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. PBS Wisconsin collaborates with other groups and considers its new two-hour documentary a beginning to new conversations, recognizing a community overlooked in our state. We explore the film Wisconsin Pride that lifts up LGBTQ plus voices, and you can join the discussion. Call in with a question, share insights, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andy Soth is here, senior producer for PBS Wisconsin and producer of Wisconsin Pride. We also have Victor Macias Gonzalez, a professor of history and race, gender, and sexuality studies at UW-La Crosse, contributed to the documentary. Victor, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Happy to be here.
And Victor, the film begins with talking about Indigenous people of Wisconsin prior to colonization. Why is that important to understanding the state's LGBTQ history?
Well, I think that it's important to understand that from the very first records we have, Europeans noticed that there was a different gender and sexual practice in the region, and they used it to justify some of the treatment that they doled out to this population. So it indicates how important gender and sexuality are throughout time.
Can you explain the meaning of the term Two-Spirit, how it is used within some Indigenous communities?
Okay, so the term Two-Spirit is used in some Indigenous communities to indicate that gender and sexuality are different, right? An earlier word that was used and that showed up in many Spanish and French records was berdache, but Two-Spirit is the preferred term concurrently.
There are stories of Two-Spirit people who disappeared from Native American boarding schools, and Wisconsin Pride documents how Two-Spirit people were disdained. How has the perception changed over time? What are your insights there?
Well, I think what happened is a very important part of the boarding school experience was to impose white settler views on gender and sexuality. Mm-hmm. And those that did not fit that had a bad experience. So it was also part of the process of transforming or transculturating the Indigenous into a more acceptable being, if you would, using the warped language of the time period.
I think we're having trouble hearing you, Professor. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah, I just finished my comments.
Sorry about that. That's okay. I want to turn, you've documented the importance of gay bars and their role in the LGBTQ plus movement. Why were these bars so important?
Well, bars are very important because they are used by people to meet there after work, to make acquaintances, to find out about jobs. They're not just socializing places. Ultimately, they are one of the most important spaces to organize the community, right? In the upper Midwest, bars is a place where people spend a lot of time because our houses are so small and they're expensive to heat, right? So a lot of time is spent in them, right? And so folks learn a lot about themselves at bars, right? You know, they learn what's fashionable, you know, what's acceptable, and so on and so forth, right? For gay men, bars were a place where they could find people like themselves. And, you know, sometimes folks think that, you know, we had gay bars all the way at the beginning. We didn't. Gay men and women would use these spaces, often just one corner of a bar, a place where folks were friendly and welcoming and not aggressive. And, you know, this is a place where they might meet someone that, you know, might turn into a relationship, right? We know also that around the early 1940s, there emerged a kind of gay travel literature. And these gay travel guides provide a lot of information about where these bars were located, what kind of scene there was at these bars, if they were more of a suit and tie place, if it was more working class, so on and so forth. And a lot of these early gay spaces were actually businessmen's hotels, bars, right? Places where nobody would think bad about a couple of men checking into a room, because, you know, it was typical of male travelers to travel together at that time, right? It was also a place where they could find out information about parties or about other social circles, about other events. The gay bar workers, the servers there, who also played a very important role in communicating information, right?
So certainly almost like a nexus of the community.
It is most certainly. Yeah. It was the internet of the time.
That's a good way of putting it.
It was
like
very
that.
Word of mouth. Yeah, very word of mouth. But people used the space with the knowledge that they had from the guidebooks, right?
Andy, how do you bring to light Wisconsin gay bars in Wisconsin Pride, the documentary?
Well, that was a bit tricky. We were fortunate because, you know, like I said before, these were largely undocumented. And so there's actually fairly little photographic record of gay bar life. We were fortunate in that there is one rare example. John Riggs was a bartender in his college days at the 602 Club and an aspiring photographer. And he maintained, you know, he photographed life. So it's really one of the few existing records of gay life in bars. The 602 Club was not a gay bar, but a gay friendly place. It was sort of an unwritten code. I think it was Saturday nights, maybe Friday nights, that sort of the up front was the gay crowd. And in the back were the chess players.
I wonder, how did you, were you able to get photographs of these bars? Did you have VHS footage at all? Or, you know, what were some of those primary sources for able, you know, to bring them to life in the documentary?
Sure. Yeah. Well, like I said, those were hard to find.
Yes.
And then particularly, particularly film. You know, part of it is bringing it to life is kind of the photographic style that we use. So you may be we may be including, you know, bar photos, but also objects that you might find in a bar. And and then one of the one of the most interesting bar stories is about the Black Knight bar and the Black Knight brawl, where some homophobic sailors on leave came to the bar to try to disrupt things and were repelled, and the patrons fought back. It's sort of Wisconsin's Stonewall.
I'm going to reintroduce you here for a moment. Andy Soth there, producer of Wisconsin Pride, this documentary. We also have Victor Macias, who is a professor at UW La Crosse, focusing on race, gender, and sexuality studies. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Victor, you've studied a lesbian newsletter called Leaping La Crosse that was published from 79 through 2007. How has this newsletter influenced members of the local LGBTQ plus community?
It's very interesting to use this kind of material. We were very fortunate, very lucky that the folks that organized it and ran it for almost 40 years donated a complete set to the university. So we need to understand that this is a very small publication. The format varied somewhat over time. It actually started out with a different name. It started out as the National Lesbian Feminist Organization News. It changed its name around 1981. And it's one of many other little small community newsletters. It's surprising that even smaller towns like La Crosse, you know, there was a local La Crosse Gay Association that published its own newsletter, the Cross Currents, throughout the 80s. There was even the Southwest Rural Gay and Lesbian Support Network that had its New Beginnings newsletter in the early 80s, early 90s. Right. So what it helps us to understand is people were organized, and more importantly, that there was a community. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you can look at these things and see what kind of events they organized. La Crosse had about 50,000 people, but it was able to support as many as 4 gay and lesbian bars at a time. And what's interesting to see is how these bars sponsored sports leagues. They sponsored concerts. They sponsored field trips. They really gave the emerging gay community a life, if you will, right? The same thing that the straights were doing in their bars, you know, was the same thing that the gays were doing in their bars. And these publications help us to see that.
I would imagine you see La Crosse in a whole different light through these newsletters.
Yes, yes, a very different La Crosse and also a very inclusive La Crosse. Mm. Through these newsletters, we get a sense that, contrary to what a lot of folks would assume, that there were a lot of churches that provided space for gay students, especially to meet by the university, right? Mm. There's a gay student group at UWL in the late 1970s, for example. And not too far from campus was actually one of the largest gay bars in the entire state that could accommodate about 300-400 people at a time. It sadly burnt down in the 1970s. But these newsletters help us see what a rich and vibrant life gay men and women had in the state. And it's good to see lots of projects there for students to keep researching and historians to keep learning about.
Victor Macias is a professor of history and race, gender, and sexuality studies at UW La Crosse, contributed to this documentary. PBS Wisconsin's Andy Soth with us, producer credits on the documentary Wisconsin Pride. And there's still time to talk, to discuss. Call in with a question or a comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explored this new PBS Wisconsin documentary, Wisconsin Pride, examining the lived experiences of LGBTQ plus Wisconsinites through time, lifting up stories that have been overlooked, hidden histories. Call in with a question. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Andy Soth is senior producer at PBS Wisconsin and behind this film, and Victor Macias, professor of history, race, gender, and sexuality studies at UW La Crosse. Let's bring in John now in Duluth. John, hi.
Hello there.
Hi, go ahead. What would you? Yes.
Growing up in Minneapolis, being a straight male, I actually preferred going to more of the gay bars because it was a more positive social interaction with people. There tended to not be fights and drunken brawls. And when speaking to some of the original owners of two or three of the gay bars that I actually frequented, they actually said that some of their bars got started for safety, because when people of the homosexual community ended up at a straight bar, there were sometimes verbal attacks, assaults, threats. And so they started to create the community and decided to open some of these bars as more of a safe haven so that people could actually be comfortable and be safe. Because they always had the best dance floors and some of the best people. That's why I always frequented those. Even though I was a straight male, I was more welcomed at those than, say, a country bar or another themed bar.
John, thank you so much for that. Victor, insights there.
Mm. Those bars are full of many, many stories. I think the bars are definitely a safe space. The bars are definitely a place to build community and to find safety. These bars are complex spaces also. They have a lot of worlds come together, right? Straight worlds and gay worlds come together there. I think that the bars need a lot more attention, and also a lot more history. I think research needs to be done around the owners whom your caller mentioned. Hmm. One of the owners in La Crosse, who actually opened up about a half dozen bars over some 30 years, we stumbled across some very, very rich history. Guy born in 1942, and by the late 60s had opened up the first actual gay bar in La Crosse by the name of Michael Hansen. And then turns out he had wanted to be a priest, and then that didn't work out. He served in the army for a while, and that didn't work out, came back to La Crosse. But what was interesting is how he wanted to make the space safe, like your caller mentioned, right? And so he actually had a nickname. His nickname was Mother. And so one of his bars eventually was called Mothers. And he played an important role in the community once AIDS spread, in that there were no social services for these men and women. And he developed what was called the Red Ribbon Fund. And he fundraised, and he made sure folks were fed and cured and tended to, and that they were not left alone, because there was a lot of fear, right? Mm-hmm. And the community took care of its own in that way. So it's a kind of history that needs to be done more. And unfortunately, you know, we found out about this person, but he was already ill, and we could not interview him. And sadly, yeah. He died before we were able to get to him. It would be wonderful if we could get some photographs or paperwork about his experience, right? And for that matter, for any LGBT experience, I think it's very sad when LGBTQ folks pass away and family members are embarrassed by what they find and burn and destroy photographs, magazines, you know, keepsakes. We want those for our museums. We want those for our libraries. We, you know, don't get rid of those things. Reach out to the universities and the libraries. We'll take all that stuff off your hands.
Very valuable, yes, documentation. Rona in Cameron with a question. Rona, hi.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask your guest what the name of the bar was in La Crosse, Wisconsin that burned down in the 70s. And my follow-up to that would be, why did it not rebuild? Was it just financially unable to, or did society's opinion change so much during that time frame that they weren't able to? I just would be curious to know that. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor.
Sure. That place was called the Down and Under. It operated from April 76 to April 77. It was located at 787 North Losey Boulevard, right under the viaduct of Highway 16, a few blocks from UWL. It was owned by Patrick Truzzoni and managed by Joshua Oliver. It was a massive two-storied building. It had a large dance floor and a beer garden, if you can imagine. How Wisconsin can you get, right? It was very successful. And so there's been a lot of speculation as to how it burnt down or why it burnt down. We know that at one weekend party in the summer of 76, they had drag performers and male dancers from Chicago. And they had a crowd of over 500 people. So there's been speculation about whether they were taking business from other folks or whether they weren't paying off other folks. So it's, we don't know. We don't know, but it's, it makes for a lot of more research for us to find out.
Andy, turning to you, PBS Wisconsin says this film marks a change in how the organization will approach sharing future LGBTQ plus stories. How is this the beginning of a new conversation for PBS Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's just all part of a overall effort for diversifying voices, diversifying our sources. And I think this has been, you know, connected to this, has just been a tremendous engagement effort. Bryce mentioned the premiere in Milwaukee, and that was just a great community event. And I'd love to mention that in Madison, we'll be having its Madison premiere at the Barrymore on Saturday. Tickets are free if you just register or just search Wisconsin Pride Barrymore, and you should find it.
Victor, how do you feel about this documentary and the work that has come together?
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm very happy that this is happening. And, you know, I wish we had more. We have a lot of, I think the producer did an excellent job trying to reach out and be as inclusive as we could. But I'm beginning to wonder what else we could do documenting, for example, rural gay life. I moved to La Crosse very recently, in the year 2000, and immediately was surprised by the amount of contact between folks in the rural areas and the gay community in La Crosse. And one day I walked into a party, I was taken by a friend to a party, 40 gay farmers. My God, it was amazing to see gay community in the rural areas. You know, I'd love to see something like that be worked on in the future.
So much more documenting to do, so much more work to explore. Andy, what, you know, in the final moments here, what do you think are the next steps, next projects here?
Oh my, I don't know. This has been a four-year effort, and first a little bit of vacation. But but you know, Victor makes a good point. I mean, even in 2 hours, we can't cover the whole diversity under the LGBTQ umbrella. So yeah, we're looking
explore.
for those opportunities. Yeah.
Thank you.
And we do, I would say on our website, which you can also find, we diversify some of the stories there. So there's more content there to check out.
Thank you both for joining us. Andy Soth, producer of PBS Wisconsin's new documentary, Wisconsin Pride. Victor Macias, professor of history and race, gender, and sexuality studies at UW La Crosse. Earlier, we heard from historian, author, and activist Bryce Smith. Find a link to Wisconsin Pride at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.